Welcome to the CV Farm Podcast, where we discuss medications as they relate to cardiovascular health. Thanks for joining me today. My name is Nathan Kellogg. I'm a PharmD for practicing pharmacist student with the University of Alberta. And today I was hoping to talk a little bit about the potential role of colchicine for the secondary prevention of coronary artery disease. Patients with coronary artery disease are at high risk of having a subsequent coronary event, and as a result, they're started on a number of medications in order to help mitigate this risk. Some of the medications that they may be started on include things like statins, antiplatelet therapy, ACE inhibitors, and beta blockers. And so researchers are looking at the mechanism behind atherosclerosis when they're trying to determine additional therapies that may provide benefit in this population. So because inflammation is thought to play a key role in atherosclerosis as well as its complications, this has become a target for new potential therapies in this patient population. There's a previous anti-inflammatory medication, canakinumab, that's been evaluated in the CANTOS trial, and this actually showed that its inhibition of interleukin-1 beta reduced cardiovascular events by 15% in that trial. We know that colchicine is an anti-inflammatory medication that's commonly used for things like gout and pericarditis. Unlike canakinumab, however, it's oral, it's inexpensive, and it has a relatively long history of use, and so we have a fairly well-established safety profile. Atherosclerosis involves plaque buildup within our artery walls, and patients who have risk factors for coronary artery disease, including things like diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, smoking, and exposure to inflammatory mediators help to facilitate the actual process of atherosclerosis. In patients that are exposed to these risk factors, the endothelial layer of the coronary arteries becomes more permeable. This leads to migration of things like LDL, as well as white blood cells, into the walls of the arteries. Once in the wall of the arteries, this LDL is taken up by macrophages. This leads to the formation of foam cells, which is part of the early process of atherosclerosis. These foam cells ultimately result in release of additional inflammatory mediators, and this process is able to continue. Colchicine inhibits microtubule formation and thus a number of processes that utilize microtubules. This includes leukocyte adhesion, migration, phagocytosis, and inflammasome formation, which is involved in the release of inflammatory mediators. So by inhibiting these processes, colchicine has been proposed to decrease the process of atherosclerosis. Considering that patients with coronary artery disease already have a relatively high pill burden, as well as considering the known adverse effects of colchicine and drug interactions associated with its use, the evidence needs to be examined carefully in trying to determine whether or not it would be something that's appropriate to add to our array of treatment options for patients with coronary disease. This brings me to the clinical question that I wanted to discuss today. So in patients with known coronary disease, what is the efficacy and safety of colchicine for secondary prevention when added to standard of care? In order to help answer this question, I searched Medline, PubMed, Embase, Google Scholar, UpToDate, DynaMed, and Cochrane Database for relevant articles, and I limited my results to English language randomized controlled trials, systematic reviews, and meta-analyses. In order to ensure that I didn't miss any articles, for each of the articles that I found, I also reviewed the reference list for additional articles. So my search returned four major RCTs that helped to answer the clinical question: Ladoco, Colcott, COPS, and Ladoco 2. For our discussion today, I'm going to focus on the Colcott trial and the Ladoco 2 trial, as these are by far the largest two trials that were done, and they're also the highest quality trials that were done. The Colcott trial looks at the segment of the population that just had a recent MI, whereas the Ladoco 2 trial looks at patients with stable coronary disease. The Colcott trial was published in the New England Journal of Medicine on December 26, 2019, and it looks at the efficacy and safety of low-dose colchicine after myocardial infarction. This was a multi-center, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, included just under 5,000 patients with a median follow-up of 22.6 months. This was looking at patients who have had a recent MI, so within the past 30 days, and they were randomized to receive either colchicine 0.5 milligrams PO daily or placebo. In terms of the primary endpoint, it was a composite outcome that included death from cardiovascular causes, resuscitated cardiac arrest, myocardial infarction, stroke, or urgent hospitalization for angina leading to coronary revascularization. Patients were included in the trial if they had had an MI within the last 30 days, completed any planned revascularization procedures, and if they were treated according to national guidelines. Patients were excluded if they had severe heart failure or a ventricular ejection fraction of less than 35%, if they had had a stroke within the last 3 months, if the index MI was determined to be a type 2 MI, patients who received CABG or were planning to receive CABG, if they had inflammatory bowel disease or chronic diarrhea, just thinking about some of the adverse effects of colchicine, any significant hematologic abnormalities, severe renal or hepatic disease, and patients who are on long-term systemic glucocorticoids. Just to give you a better idea of the average patient in the trial, the median age was 61, only about a fifth of patients were female, over 70% of patients were white, the mean BMI was 28, less than a third of patients were smokers, the vast majority, so over 90%, received PCI for their index MI. And in terms of the time from the event to randomization in the trial, the median time was 13 days. Thinking about some of the comorbidities of the patients, half of patients had hypertension, about a fifth of patients had diabetes, 16% of patients had a previous MI, only 2% of patients had heart failure, and just over 2% had had a previous stroke or TIA. For the results, the primary composite cardiovascular outcome occurred in 5.5% in the colchicine group, compared to 7.1% in the placebo group. This gives a hazard ratio of 0.77, and it was a statistically significant difference. So this provides a number needed to treat of about 63 patients to prevent one additional event with colchicine. It's important to note that this difference was largely driven by a difference in incidence of stroke, as well as urgent hospitalization for angina leading to revascularization, as these were the only two individual components of the primary composite that were statistically significant. Looking at the adverse events that were observed in the trial, there was actually a similar rate of adverse events as well as serious adverse events in the colchicine and the placebo group. Surprisingly, in terms of gastrointestinal adverse events, they occurred at about 17.5% in both groups. For the outcome of nausea, it was slightly higher in the colchicine group at 1.8% versus 1% in placebo group. Flatulence was a bit higher in the colchicine group at 0.6% versus 0.2% in the placebo group. And then the outcome of pneumonia occurred in 0.9% in the colchicine group versus 0.4% in the placebo group. When thinking about my assessment for bias, the trial was randomized. Patients were analyzed according to the group that they were randomized to in an intention to treat analysis. Baseline characteristics were similar between the two groups. The trial was double-blinded. The study was continued to completion, and funding was provided primarily by the Government of Quebec as well as the National Institute of Health Research. And so I rated all those categories to be low risk of bias. In terms of allocation concealment, they don't mention this specifically in terms of the strategy used for randomization, so I rated this as moderate risk. And in terms of patients that were lost to follow-up, there was about 1.9% lost to follow-up, and I rated this as moderate risk as well because although it's a very low number, the absolute difference for the primary outcome between the two groups is also quite small, so this small amount of patients could actually have influenced the overall findings. Overall, some of the strengths of the trial include that it had a large sample size of around 4,800 patients. The investigators used clinically important outcomes rather than surrogate outcomes. It was multi-center, so this included patients from about 12 countries and 167 centers. And it was a double-blind comparison. In terms of limitations, some of the ones to highlight is that the duration of follow-up was limited to about 23 months. So this doesn't provide information on some of the maybe long-term efficacy or safety information. It wasn't adequately powered to evaluate individual efficacy and safety outcomes, so this is why we see the composite outcomes that were used. The results can only be applied to patients with a recent MI, so we can't use these results to evaluate the efficacy of colchicine on patients with stable coronary artery disease. The significant finding for the primary outcome was primarily driven by a difference in stroke as well as hospitalization for angina. There was a relatively high rate of discontinuation of the study medication. Fortunately, this was similar between the two groups, but it was just over 18% in both groups. And finally, there was relatively limited gender and race diversity because over 70% of patients were white, and there was very little representation in terms of the female gender. So, based on the findings of this trial, the authors concluded that among patients with a recent MI, colchicine at a dose of 0.5 milligrams daily led to a significantly lower risk of ischemic cardiovascular events compared to placebo. So, what do I conclude from this trial? So, colchicine does appear to reduce the risk of cardiovascular events in patients with a recent MI. However, this result is primarily driven by a reduction in stroke and hospitalization for angina, whereas there is no difference in overall mortality between the two groups. I would prioritize optimization of medications, other post-MI medications that have actually been shown to decrease mortality in this population. However, I do think that the addition of colchicine would be reasonable given the reduction in stroke and hospitalization for angina, but it would of course require a discussion with the patient in terms of potential adverse effects of medications and of course the additional pill burden of adding another medication. Moving on to the LODOKO 2 trial. The LODOKO 2 trial was published in the New England Journal of Medicine on August 31st, 2020, and it was looking at colchicine in patients with chronic coronary disease. This was a multi-center, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, and included just over 5,500 patients with a median follow-up of 28.6 months. Patients with chronic coronary disease were randomized to receive either colchicine 0.5 milligrams once daily or placebo, and the primary outcome they were looking at was a composite outcome of cardiovascular death, myocardial infarction, ischemic stroke, or ischemia-driven coronary revascularization. In order to be included in the trial, patients had to be aged 35 to 82. They had to have evidence of coronary disease, and so this was indicated either by coronary angiography, CT angiography, or coronary artery calcium scan. And finally, they had to be clinically stable for at least 6 months. Patients were excluded if they had moderate to severe renal impairment, which was defined as an eGFR of less than 50 mils per minute. They were also excluded if they had severe heart failure or severe valvular heart disease. Looking at the average patient that was included in the trial, the mean age was about 66. Only about 16% of patients were female. Two-thirds of patients were from the Netherlands, whereas the remaining third of patients were from Australia. In terms of comorbidities, just over half of patients had hypertension, about 18% had diabetes, 95% of patients had an estimated GFR of greater than 60 mils per minute, about 27% of patients had had an acute coronary syndrome within the last 24 months, 57% of patients had had an acute coronary syndrome greater than 24 months prior to enrollment. Overall, the patients that were included in the trial were fairly well medically optimized. Over 90% of patients were receiving some form of antiplatelet therapy. 94% of patients were receiving statin therapy. Just over 70% of patients were on a RAS inhibitor, and just over 60% of patients were on a beta blocker. Looking at the results, the primary composite outcome of cardiovascular death, myocardial infarction, ischemic stroke, or ischemia-driven coronary revascularization occurred in 6.8% of patients in the colchicine group as compared to 9.6% of patients in the placebo group. This was a statistically significant difference, giving a hazard ratio of 0.69 and a number needed to treat of about 36 patients in order to prevent one additional event with colchicine. In terms of the individual components of the primary outcome, both myocardial infarction as well as ischemia-driven coronary revascularization were significantly lower in the colchicine group as compared to placebo. However, all components of the primary outcome, point estimates for the hazard ratio were quite similar. There was no difference between the two groups in terms of the outcome of all-cause mortality. Interestingly, from the safety data for the outcome of non-cardiovascular death, this occurred at 1.9% in the colchicine group compared to 1.3% in the placebo group. And although this did not reach statistical significance, the majority of the confidence interval actually lies above 1. In terms of other safety outcomes, there was no difference between the two groups in terms of hospitalization for infection, hospitalization for pneumonia, or hospitalization for gastrointestinal reasons. However, it's important to note that this trial did use a one-month run-in period before the randomization process, and this likely selected out patients where colchicine was poorly tolerated. For the outcome of myalgia, it occurred in 21.2% in the colchicine group versus 18.5% in the placebo group, and this was a statistically significant difference between the two. Overall, I assessed the trial to be low risk of bias as the trial was randomized. Allocation was likely concealed as they used a computerized algorithm for randomization. Patients were analyzed according to their randomized group in an intention to treat analysis, which is the most conservative type of analysis for this type of trial. Baseline characteristics were largely similar between the two groups. The trial was double-blinded. Follow-up was largely complete. The study was continued to completion, and there was a low risk of funding bias given that it wasn't industry-funded. Some key strengths to highlight from the trial: this was a double-blind comparison. It's a large sample size of about 5,500 patients. It was multi-center, including about 43 sites. And they used clinically important outcomes as opposed to surrogate outcomes when evaluating the treatments. Some of the limitations include the use of a run-in period, and this likely underestimated the incidence of adverse effects because they likely selected out patients that poorly tolerated medications in that first initial one-month run-in period. It provides limited information regarding the long-term efficacy and safety beyond the trial period. Similar to the Cocott trial, there was poor female representation at less than 20% of included patients. They only included patients from Australia and the Netherlands. And approximately 95% of patients had an eGFR of at least 60 mils per minute, which may have underestimated some of the adverse effects that we may see in patients with poor renal function. Based on the results of this trial, the authors concluded that among patients with chronic coronary disease, most of whom are already receiving proven secondary prevention therapies, the occurrence of cardiovascular events was significantly lower with low-dose colchicine than with placebo. For my conclusions, it does appear that colchicine decreases risk of cardiovascular events compared to placebo in patients with stable coronary disease. Adverse events were likely underestimated in the trial due to the use of the run-in period prior to randomization. And then there was the concerning trend towards an increase in non-cardiovascular death with colchicine as compared to placebo, but this didn't reach statistical significance, and it was something that wasn't actually observed in the Cocott trial, so it's possible that it was just a chance finding. Going back to our clinical question regarding the efficacy and safety of colchicine in patients with coronary artery disease and bringing together the results of both trials, colchicine does appear to decrease the risk of cardiovascular events, both when added post-MI and in patients with stable coronary disease. Although I presented just the results of the two largest trials, the smaller trial results were actually consistent with the findings of Cocott and Ladoco 2. A recent meta-analysis of four RCTs provided a total sample size of just under 11,600 patients and found that the addition of colchicine to standard of care in patients with coronary disease decreased the risk of major cardiovascular events with a hazard ratio of 0.68 for the composite outcome, including cardiovascular mortality, MI, ischemic stroke, and urgent coronary revascularization. For individual components of the composite outcome that reached statistical significance in favor of colchicine, this included myocardial infarction, ischemic stroke, and urgent coronary revascularization. The trend that was observed towards an increase in non-cardiovascular mortality in the Ladoco 2 trial was not seen in the other trials, and the combined results for overall mortality found no significant difference between colchicine and placebo, with a hazard ratio that was near 1. Ultimately, I think the decision to add colchicine should involve a shared discussion with the patient regarding the benefits and risks. I think it's very reasonable to consider the addition of colchicine to standard therapy for patients with coronary disease, and patients who are willing to accept the potential risk of adverse effects with colchicine, most notably the gastrointestinal adverse events, and the additional pill burden. Other patient-specific factors that should be taken into consideration include the potential for drug interactions, as colchicine is a CYP3A4 substrate, and the potential for an increased risk of adverse events in patients with renal impairment. Thank you for joining me today for this discussion. I hope you found this information useful for your practice. Again, my name is Nathan Kellogg, and please don't hesitate to contact me at kellock@ualberta.ca with any questions. Enjoy the rest of your day.